The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Mates Radio. Today, your pharmacist and you with Nick the Pharmacist. Nick Kay is here. You want to get in touch? And you text or WhatsApp on 166177. Email studio at manxradio.com. Call 66 1368. Lots to talk about and many questions to get through between now and one. So, Fastamai, hi Nick, how are you?
Hi Andy, I'm great, thanks for having me back.
Jolly good. You'll watch it, by the way, if you see this on video. Nick is continuing to shrivel in front of my eyes. Nick, you've been on the jabs for how long now?
Thank you. I've been quite open and transparent about that. So I've been on the jabs since the 1st of January 2025. So yeah, quite a while.
Okay, and if you don't mind me asking, how much have you lost?
Yeah, no, so I don't mind at all. So I, on the 1st of January 2025, I was 18 stone 7 with a 46 inch waist. And my appointment today, because I'm weighing day today, you know, do it properly, get the appointment, get the clinical advice. I'm 13 stone 12 and I have a 34 inch waist.
My word. Hmm. So, I mean, the slimming jabs, if you like, Mounjaro and what have you, they sound like miracle drugs.
Yeah.
Are they, and are there any downsides to them?
Yeah, no, so that's a really important question. So we always say to people, you know, you need to take advice, proper advice when you're thinking about starting these medicines. And the medicines are, you know, for me, they've been life-changing, but with anything, they're not without risk, you know, and it's really important wherever you choose to, or if you choose to get them, you are properly informed. So simple side effects you can get. One of the ways in which it works is it slows down the way in which things move through the tummy. That makes you feel a little bit fuller quicker, stops you eating so much. But if things move through the tummy more slowly, then things like constipation, heartburn, or nausea can be quite common. And obviously, we always tell everyone when they're starting, there's the one serious risk of acute pancreatitis, which, you know, is about 50 in 100,000 people. So 0.5%, 99.5% of people won't experience it. But it's just really important that we make people aware of it, you know, as we go through.
And for new listeners, these were diabetes drugs, weren't they?
Yeah, so I get
they've been around for ages.
They have, yeah, and I get quite geeky about this. So actually found in 1976. They were found when people were looking at things like anglerfish and Komodo dragons, believe it or not, and going, well, why do these animals not eat for an extended period of time, you know, and how do they control their blood sugar? And when they worked that out, exactly as you said, Andy, they then were used for the treatment of type 2 diabetes primarily, first as a daily and then a weekly injection, and been around for 15, 20 years in that, guys.
So how come it took so long for them to transfer to this field?
Yeah, so you know that, would imagine that pharmaceutical companies aren't altruistic. You know, we know they like to make a few quid. Yeah. And actually what they found was when people went on these jabs as a type 2 diabetes treatment, people lost weight. When they lost weight, then actually they came off the medicine because the type 2 diabetes reversed. And then some genius in Novo Nordisk went, well, actually, maybe I can market this as a side effect. They did then that bit of extra research and found that it also had an effect in the brain and stopped people thinking about food so often and had this effect on the tummy to stop, make you feel fuller quicker. And the rest went from there.
And that's where this, somebody's mentioned it, food noise lessons.
Yeah, no, it's a fascinating thing, you know, food noise. Exactly as you say, that ability to sort of seek out and want food. So for me, I get home after work, you know, 6:30, and then I can graze and eat the world. And it just kind of turns that kind of thought off. It's a fascinating process. That, you know, you think, is this how other people's world really is? But yeah, it is fascinating.
Okay, questions now. This is from Simon,
yeah,
who said, is it possible for pharmacists to provide prescriptions in certain circumstances? What are the limitations?
Yeah, no, that's a really, really great question. So actually, as pharmacists, you know, I've done an extra year's qualification to actually have a master's in prescribing. That's currently what you have to do. So I've been what we call an independent prescriber for the last sort of 6-7 years, also trained people to be independent prescribers. And actually, a pharmacist can prescribe anything that a doctor can, as long as it's within our clinical competence. So we have to feel comfortable comfortable and happy that we can do that. So some of the things that we commonly do on our site, and I know other independent prescribers do, is, you know, simple on the day demand things, you know, antibiotics, pain relief, that type of thing, and go from there. Actually, in this year, for the first time, all new pharmacists will graduate as prescribers. So from 2026, all new pharmacists leaving university will already be prescribers. And then it's the case of, you know, in England, if you look across, you know, they have got some NHS funded prescribing services. Scotland's way more advanced. They do lots of prescribing services on the NHS. Wales, again, somewhere in between. And I know that it's something that Manx Care are looking at as we move towards the end of this year, about maybe having that type of service available in community pharmacies, because there's actually quite a lot of prescribing pharmacists on the Isle of Man, but currently we have to do that mainly in a private framework.
Are you comfortable with the fact that the gap between GPs and pharmacists seems to be narrowing, as you say, and pharmacists are now filling that gap?
Yeah, no, so I think it's something that's really, really important as everybody moves into different parts of their skill set. What GPs are absolutely unbelievable at, and I've seen that, you know, having spent 5 years working in general practice as a pharmacist across, they're unbelievable at clinical decision making, risk holding, some of those types of things. I think where pharmacists can really take away some of that burden is some of that simple on the day demand part, some of the long term management things, things like blood pressure management. You know, when I was training new pharmacists in general practice, if you've got blood pressure medicines, you know, you've had the diagnosis of high blood pressure, that's on numbers. You can then maximize that medicine on the numbers. So we absolutely can't do everything that GPs can, but I think there's a way in which we can add skill set to help as part of that team.
Okay, another one. Is there a shortage of trained pharmacists on the Isle of Man?
There's a shortage of trained pharmacists everywhere, and the Isle of Man is one of those places. You know, we find now when I qualified as a pharmacist, you either worked in a pharmacy or you worked in a hospital. Now on the Isle of Man, you can work in, you know, in pharmacies, you can work in GP surgeries, you can work in hospitals. There are some industry posts. So, you know, I think, you know, the Isle of Man as well is actually a really nice place to practice. I think, you know, there's going to be, I think I would hope, further investment in our clinical services, especially in community pharmacy. We've had a pharmacist who is training to be a prescriber at our Balfane estate. We had an interview with University College London to make sure that we're an appropriate site for training. So yes, there's a shortage, but I think it's about selling the story of actually practicing on the Isle of Man is a really good clinical place and rewarding to be.
Okay, a note in from Grace, who said, my son likes medicine, but he doesn't want to be a doctor. Would you recommend, and how long does it take to become a pharmacist?
Yeah, so it's 5 years to be a pharmacist, so it's not an insignificant amount of time. And, you know, I have said this before, you know, as a third generation pharmacist, there's probably no hope for me, Andy, but actually we see this quite a lot, actually, because of the different ways and things pharmacists can do now: prescribe, give injections. Actually, it's a really good way to get clinical training. And if, you know, if Grace contacts you after and the son wants to come and have a look, then happy to show them around, or set them up with a pharmacy that's closer to
it
them.
Was the brown glass bottles that did it. KK&K, that's what it was. Can Indeed. A pharmacist organise a fast track appointment to a GP for a customer if he or she finds it necessary?
So I think this is where great relationships are really, really important, and that local connection between local pharmacists, teams built around general practices, I think are really important. I would only speak from a personal experience, but pharmacists don't tend to do that unless they think there's real clinical need. And all I would say is, whenever I've rung and asked to speak to GP colleagues, they've been very receptive to that. Again, I think that individual pharmacist would be doing that on the clinical need and what's important. We also understand that GP colleagues are under a huge amount of pressure, and we don't want to overburden them.
Texter 311 says, could you ask Nick, would he ever recommend fasting? Does it work?
Yeah, so fasting is something that there is some evidence with, you know, that sort of, you know, 48 hours on, 48 hours off. That, I mean, and it does work. I think, yes, it does work, but I think you need it as part of a holistic program. I think take some advice on it. You know, some things with, especially if I, you know, my field of expertise with medicines, you don't want to be fasting and not having some medicines and all that kind of stuff. The bit where I felt it a little bit nervous, I've seen somebody try to use the weight loss jabs to help them fast, and that then I think becomes problematic. So yes, it can work, but take some advice.
Okay, and a message in from Mrs. 382. What's the starting price for the injections? And where does the internet stand on this? Because that will always undercut everybody.
Yeah, so I think it's a really, really important point. So lots of people have different starting points, and it's useful to sort of have a look around. I know from our own organisation, we start at £99 for Wegovy, £169 for Mounjaro. There are, you know, other places around. And what we try and do is we try and base that on an internet price, but give great clinical service. I must admit, doing this job now and actually being a patient myself, you know, having that access to advice is really important. The other thing I would say as well, as still a board director of the National Pharmacy Association, and they did some research at the beginning of the year talking about the cloning of websites, which is really interesting. So actually you look like you're going to a legitimate website, but what's actually happening is you're going to a cloned website and then getting fake medicines. So I think there's something, you know, internet will be right for some people, but I just think that extra bit of clinical care, being able to eyeball someone, you know, if something's gone wrong, you can run down to Balthane and go to me, oi, what's going on, Nick? You know, and that's really important.
How would anybody know if it's a kosher, a genuine website?
And that's where it gets really, really, really problematic. So, you know, just double check the internet address. You know, some of the ones that have been cloned, there's one or two characters different within the actual sort of internet address that you're being directed to. And then when the product comes, where people got alerted to, they were actually faked medicine. So they didn't look quite right. But it took people to that point after the money had done and the medicines actually arrived for them to realise, you know, that they weren't kosher. And that's really problematic.
I have type 2 diabetes, says James. Can I get diabetic drug Mounjaro on the NHS?
So it'll be down to each individual clinical choice. Yeah, I don't think you'll be able to get it particularly for weight loss. But, you know, if there's another clinical need that, you know, is deemed necessary for your type 2 diabetes, then possibly. Again, when I sat on an integrated care board, Andy, in Cornwall until November last year, I know that population was 580,000, and the number of people that were potentially eligible for it on the NHS was about 2,000. So tricky criteria to get there.
A week on Monday, it's TT, Nick.
It is.
Are pharmacists busy over TT, and what kind of things can pharmacists help visitors with?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that we're part of that healthcare system to help with the influx of people coming and enjoying the fantastic event and the island and all it offers. You know, pharmacists can be helpful, again, with that minor ailment scheme, you know, medicines that have been forgotten, you know, that type of stuff. So, and again, just being that, what pharmacists are really good at is that first point of call. You know, as people come in, do I need advice? And then, as your previous question said, do I need a GP? Do I need to go somewhere else? Community pharmacists are excellent at that sort of, I can help you up to this point, but now you need to go somewhere else.
There's a message in from Sally, and you can answer this or not, Nick. What does Nick Kay think about the departure of Teresa Cope from Manx Care?
Okay, thank you for that question. So all I would say on a very personal level is, having been privileged enough to have some dealings with Teresa, she's always been exceptionally helpful, exceptionally responsive. I think she's definitely helped move community pharmacy on the island. You know, some of the projects that we've been involved with were, for example, now the Isle of Man has, under Manx Care, we have the first in Europe vaccine tracking technology in RFID fridges. We actually went and showcased that with an international company called Hire at the weekend, where we had people like David Webb, the Chief Pharmacist of England, coming to have a look at the technology and going, how is the Isle of Man 10 years ahead of everyone else? So personally, I'm sad to see Teresa go, and I think she's helped move some innovations on in the position she was at.
So you can answer that then. How is the Isle of Man 10 years ahead? What's happened?
Yeah, no, so this is...
What's RFI?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, this is a technology where, again, I've had to get upskilled with this. So this is technology whereby actually each individual vaccine gets a small little tag put on it. And the technology, when you close the fridge door, it actually reads the stock level in the fridge. It then tells you expiry date, when it's going to go out. The stuff's all in the warehouse at Balthane, getting all operationalised now. Those fridges will go out across the Manx Care estate. So the teams will be able to have real-time stock information, reducing wastage, keeping everything tracked and safe. And it's, we believe, the first site in Europe that will be operational probably in the next 4 weeks.
Okay, and Anne said, is it dangerous to take herbal remedies while on certain prescription drugs? I heard St John's wort thins the blood.
Yeah, so I think it's really important, actually. So we've got to bear in mind that herbal medicines, you know, lots of medicines that we think of now came from plants, right? You know, penicillin from ash of the bark, you know, digoxin from foxglove. So herbal medicines do have a place in treatment, but because of that, they can have effects. products. So St. John's wort, which has just been mentioned, can cause irritation, so you can in the stomach, so a bit of bleeding, you know, it can stop other medicines working. So again, St. John's wort specifically is something to definitely take some advice on. But yeah, herbal medicines, pharmacies can be a great place to sort of help you with that with your conventional medicines.
Okay, and Neil said, I knew this would come up, hantavirus, cruise ship illnesses. There's obviously a lot in the news about this recently, and there's also a new one in France with gastroenteritis outbreak. Yeah. If somebody's going on a cruise, what kind of things should they think about? Do they need to take any special first aid medical supplies with them?
Yeah, so I mean, what we normally say, you know, that cruise ship is that closed in virus. You know, hantavirus is exceptionally rare, as you said, and things being isolated and people being treated for that. You know, I think, you know, we say whether or not it's a cruise ship or going away anywhere, you know, think about the healthcare that you would be able to access when you're there. So quite often people come into the pharmacy and we say some simple stuff, you know, some paracetamol, some, you know, pain relief, some hydration salts, bit of antihistamine, something for diarrhea, you know, those things that you don't want to get short without. And other than that, then just being really aware of symptoms. And if things aren't going well, then seek medical advice.
Is it true? I mean, over the past 30, 40 years, people are a lot more hygienic. People take far more showers and baths. People use dishwashers and what have you. It used to be, they used to say, a peck of dirt never hurt you and help the immune system.
Yeah,
are we just a bit too hygienic nowadays?
Maybe. You know, having, you know, five children, I'd probably say that's probably not my house, Andy. But yeah, no, all of these things are important. When you just have a look at it, obviously the benefit of keeping hygiene and clean is probably outweighing any potential benefit of that.
Because, I mean, the immune system is like a man trap. It's like and of course it worked for so many years.
Yeah.
When we weren't as clean, it worked very hard. Now we're a lot cleaner.
Yeah.
Is that where these kind of autoimmune things come from?
Yeah, so I mean, as you say, it's one of the things where autoimmune disease is really interesting, isn't it? Which is when your own immune system overactivates to attack itself, and whether that's joints in something like arthritis or your gut in something like Crohn's disease. And I think actually, as the understanding of these conditions increases, and then the way in which we can target treatment is really important. And I think, you know, people joke to me, I don't tend to be poorly very often, but then when I am poorly, I'm really poorly. And I think working in a pharmacy and just being exposed to people that, you know, cough and sniffle and splutter on you, your immune system is sort of, you know, activated in that way, and, you know, maybe deal with more viruses in a more efficient way than other things.
Another message in just said there was something in the UK news recently about a weight loss pill that people have been using. Weight loss jabs can switch to once they've hit their target weight. Yeah. How does that work, and is it available?
Yeah, no, so that was some press that came out earlier this week, actually. So there's a medicine, you have to excuse my pronunciation, orfenagliptin. I don't know where they come up with these names. It's just to make us sound important, Andy. But this is an interesting medicine that's just been approved in America by the FDA. Is made by Eli Lilly, the same company that make Mounjaro. And the way in which they're positioning it is, although it can help with weight loss, it's only 12 to 15% of body mass after a certain time, which is less than both Mounjaro and Wegovy. But exactly as the person asking the question has said, what it seems to be doing is once you've hit your target weight with the injectables, then a once a daily pill is meaning that you 70% of people maintain that weight and then weight doesn't go back on. So the second part of that question, is it available yet? The application to the Medicines Health and Regulatory Authority, the MHRA, has gone in this month following FDA approval. It's gone in actually for the whole of Europe. Obviously, the Isle of Man will be covered under UK. We've been told that that should be by end of year, but really not a replacement for the injections, more a maintenance once you've hit target.
Okay, and this one, well, this is anonymous, but it's a lady talking about her mother. Her mother apparently is on 20 pills a day.
Yeah.
How do you approach deprescribing, or if you like, if somebody's been on for years, has been on lots and lots and lots of pills, what's the process of assessing those to see if there's anything somebody can come off?
Yeah, so I think this is a really important point. You know, polypharmacy, as we called it, or lots of different medicines, is a really, really big issue. You know, having said before, having worked for 5 years in general practice back across, and, you know, we have pharmacists that work in GP practices in the Isle of Man, or, you know, appointment with GPs or appropriate clinicians, actually the review and the stopping was something I used to love doing, you know, because because actually in medicine, we're, whether that's medics, pharmacists, doctors, nurses, we're great at starting stuff and we're bad at stopping it. And actually, I think if we're on 20 medicines a day...
Is 20 a lot?
It is a lot, but it, you know, and you can see how that happens. You know, lots of people, you know, have one medicine for something else, one medicine for something else. Is the original condition still there? You know, I had a lady the other day who was on iron tablets, but that's because she'd been on a medicine called omeprazole to help with the tummy acid. That stops you absorbing as much iron. She'd come off the omeprazole, but was still on the iron. And actually, we just need to have a look at that and go, well, do you need the iron anymore? So things build up over time. I think what we would call a structured medication review is something that, you know, you could access in general practice. Does take a bit of time, but I think it's really sensible to then have a look at that.
Manx Care say they're really busy at the moment. Obviously, elective surgery has been stopped and what have you. Are you busy? Are pharmacies in general busy at the moment?
Yeah. So pharmacies are busy. Prescription numbers and prescription volumes continue to go up all the time. So, you know, we are, you know, dispensing more prescriptions. We are seeing more people, you know, as pharmacies get to be, you know, a help in within that primary care setting to see see more people and be part of that team, then we are busier. And, you know, pharmacies also trying to push the envelope a little bit, you know, whether that's mole mapping, ear waxing, you know, whatever else we might remove or whatever else we might do. But yeah, pharmacies continue to be busier like all parts of healthcare.
Interesting you say that. This is Malcolm WhatsApped in to say, what does Nick think about skincare AI analysis tools? Boots.com has a free app which gives instant results from any photo uploaded. Yeah. I tried it and was very impressed.
Yeah, so AI technology, I think, can help. What we've actually done, and I think other pharmacies on the island have done, we use a service which is an others are available called Map My Mole, which is a thing where you come into the pharmacy. We use a phone to take a couple of different pictures. That then goes to a team of 12 consultant dermatologists across. They would say that they still do it better than the AI, which is really interesting, and that's where we're going from. We've not been doing many of those, probably about 50 or 60 so far, but we've actually found 3 cancers already, and that actually is a really big deal. We've then managed to refer those to people on island and have those things removed. So skincare is something that, you know, we sometimes, oh, it's fine, it's okay, you know, oh, it's just a bit itchy, that mole, it's bleeding a little bit. But actually, that type of stuff is really important. And I think, you know, to have helped those people find those things, hopefully has changed their lives for the positive.
Well, that's fantastic. Mm. And the key with moles is if the shape changes, as you say, if they get bigger and bigger, something has to be done.
Yes.
Map My Mole.
Yeah, Map My Mole, it is. It's really interesting. So, yeah, as you say, those sorts of things you say, some sort of change in shape, change in colour, bleeding, itching, you know, don't mess around, get it checked out.
Okay, let's have a look here. Oh my word. What's your viewpoint using peptides? Do you know what's a peptide?
What's a peptide? Yeah. So peptides.
BP157 and TB500 for helping with recovery from injury.
Yeah. So this peptides are a really interesting area, actually. So actually, if you think about it, Mounjaro is actually a peptide. Wegovy are actually peptides, but they're what they call non-natural peptides. So peptides are all the rage, really big in the US, becoming more part of what we would call wellness medicine. Currently in the UK and the Isle of Man, there isn't a way to access them properly because actually they are classed as research medicines. So if you look at some of the places people are accessing them from, they're not intended for human use. Having said that, you know, there are people that I see that come in, they ask for advice on them. And I think the bit at the minute where they're sitting, it does seem that they do show some beneficial effects, as we've sort of said, that caller's mentioned a few, where they actually help maybe with repair and regeneration and that type of stuff. One of the interesting counter-arguments I heard the other day was somebody, a medic, saying, well, actually, think about those cells that divide quickly in your body. Some of those are cancer cells. So actually, are we giving ourselves, which not only will promote rapid growth and repair, but are we giving something that may actually promote rapid growth of cancers and things like that? So it's going to be a really interesting space that develops, I think, over the next sort of 6 months, which maybe the Isle of Man should look at exploiting.
Okay, Nick Kay is here from Kingsley Mooty. Call and text and email. Got lots of messages to get through today. Nick the Pharmacist is on through till one. What would you like to bring up?
Looking for your next staycation-inspired escape? Keep it closer than you think with Logan Air. You can now save 20% on flights with promo code TARTAN20. All the escape with none of the long haul. Near really is the new far. With Logan Air, your next staycation is cleared for takeoff. To save 20%, book by midnight on Tuesday, 19th May at loganair.co.uk. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply, subject to availability.
Direct Cremation is just that. An affordable and simple cremation without all the costs associated with a funeral service. Find out more by visiting directcremation.im or phone Direct Cremations on 478-422.
Drive smarter. Drive more reliable. Drive a great deal at Manin Motors. With a superb range of cars for every budget, always available. And if we don't have it, we'll source it. Plus, servicing, valeting and prestige detailing too. Manin Motors. Richmond Hill, Douglas. Find us on Facebook or call 420-420. That's 420-420. Drive a better bargain at Manin Motors.
One Architectural Design Company has particular expertise in achieving planning approval for a wide variety of projects, from landmark buildings to spectacular homes. Talk to the experts at Ellis Brown and get your project off the ground. For excellence in design, search Ellis Brown.
One of the things I love most about being a journalist is that everyone has a story to tell. And you can go to an interview with the intention of talking about one thing, and before you know it, you find all kinds of other really interesting things to talk about. And that's what happened to me when I met Thomas Cleeter from Ballykeenan Farm in Jerby. I'm Amy Griffiths, and on tonight's episode of Island Life, we'll be speaking about everything from coastal erosion to the island's food security to the struggles many farmers are having with their mental health. That's tonight at 6:30 here on Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Nick Kay is here, Nick the pharmacist on Manx Radio. I'm a smoker, says Brian. I'm a smoker, but I suffer from chest infections. I then have to book an appointment to go and see the doctor to get an amoxicillin prescription. Surely it would be better if pharmacists could just sell amoxicillin, amongst others, as they do in parts of Asia. That would save doctors time for prescriptions. And as I'd be paying for the drug myself, it could also reduce the cost to the NHS.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting point of view. I think we have to be really aware of something called AMR, or antimicrobial resistance. The overuse of antibiotics is obviously and could be really problematic. It's listed on lots of countries' risk registers at the same as, running out of fuel and all that kind of stuff. So I think access at the minute to antibiotics is important. If you look across, there's systems under things like Pharmacy First where you can access antibiotics under the right clinical guidance. We have places in that in community pharmacy around things like urine infections where you can access antibiotics with the right clinical guidance. I think if the right protocols are put in place, I think, getting those simple things away from general practice could be helpful, but we need to be really mindful of that type of stuff as well.
Okay, so bearing in mind, antibiotics, I'm paraphrasing this, but obviously they'll kill, but they also kill good stuff as well, don't they? So how many times a year, ideally, would anybody take antibiotics?
So it's really, really difficult to sort of say, because it's always a risk-benefit at that moment. So, is the risk, as you say, of those bad bacteria and what they're doing and what they're causing outweighing those potential knocking out of good gut flora and fauna, the things of having diarrhea and thrush. But, actually, if you've got somebody who, has a condition whereby they might need repeated antibiotics, that's fine. You don't want them to get things like sepsis and other stuff. So it's really individual on a person-by-person basis. But I think those things that you can do to help, only use them if appropriate. Don't ask them for them if they're a virus. Seek out some clinical help, maybe some, good bacteria replacement things. There was some data around things like, the Yakults and Actimels and that kind of stuff actually helping at the time. But really interestingly with that data, you've got to get them home quick, because if you pick them up at the beginning of your supermarket shop and wait at the end, they'll be dead by the time you get them home. So last thing in the basket, first thing in the fridge.
Okay. Antibiotic resistance then. I mean, does medicine have an answer to this? Because we've been shoveling antibiotics down our necks for a long time, 50, 60 odd years. What's the situation with that?
So AMR is really, really important, and actually is something that is it crosses across all sorts of areas, human health, veterinary medicine, all sorts of things. There is now fast tracking at the MRHA for antibiotics so that, they can get through approval systems quicker, but with the right checks in place. And also, I was at a talk a couple of years ago. I co-chaired something at the Royal Society, which is around vaccination. So actually, it's a really interesting point that if you think about it now, we have some vaccines for things that are bacterial, so pneumonias or whatever it may be, if you're vaccinated against them, as we said earlier, Andy, your own immune system can attack them, then you'll never need the antibiotics. So the facet about making sure you use them appropriately, but also other ways in which you may not need the antibiotics, and new antibiotics coming on stream, I think are really important.
Is this how the superbug started in hospitals? How did that come about?
Yeah, so the first one was methicillin resistance Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA, MRSA is the one that everybody will remember. Always sticks in my mind because the aureus means when you grow it in a petri dish, it looks gold, which is a useless fact, which is still in my brain, Andy. I'm great at a pub quiz. But I think, what that means is, methicillin at the time was the most advanced penicillin, and the bugs were resistant to that. If they're resistant to the best penicillin, then they become a superbug, and that's why people have to sometimes have swabs before they have operations and all that kind of stuff, because this bug does live in us, and there's ways in which you can sort of clean the skin and stuff beforehand, so it then won't cause problems with infection post-surgery.
Texter 797 says, would the weight loss injection help with lymphedema?
Not normally, no. And actually, we do have patients that actually have lymphedema, and actually those can be both. There can sometimes be consultations where you need to be really mindful in that, and the scales in that are less important, but you can see people's weight sort of changing, but it depends on how the lymphedema is on the day, and we talk about the general health benefit and what that looks like, because there will be underlying health benefit, underlying sort of weight loss, fat loss, but the scales in that place become less important. So will it help generally with health? Yes. Will it help combat the lymphedema? No.
Mrs. T messaged in to say, could you ask Nick his opinion on magnesium? I know there are different types. Is it beneficial?
Yeah, so magnesium is really interesting and actually is prescribed a lot on the German version of the NHS, actually. We tend to prescribe it for very specific conditions over here, but really helpful in some conditions when people may have kidney problems, but also sort of from a general health benefit, we seem to see it helping with sort of cramps, muscle fatigue. I've seen it used for people who are on statins to supplement some of the muscle fatigue you could get on statins, which lower cholesterol, and general sort of cramping. We used to sell a lot in one of the pharmacies I was at, which was particularly next to somebody, the place where we did lots of coastal path walking and things. So useful supplementation, seek some advice, but that type of area is where we see
how
it
does
used.
It work?
So it just helps with the sort of hydration of the tissues. It helps with the regeneration of the muscle, reduces the cramping, that sort of weight loss. Back in the day when my grandfather was in the army, we used to talk about old-fashioned salt tablets. If you look at things like rehydration salts like diorolite, they're electrolyte-based. So hydration in, cramping less. Magnesium is just good at that.
Talking of salt, Andy on 667 says, salt, table salt, pink or rock salt or sea salt, which is good for iodine or alternatives?
Oh, excellent. Okay, so again, I would check with, as far as iodine is concerned, I would just check with whatever is within the salt packet. I would say I quite like a natural salt, but a sea salt, coming from both Cornwall and living on the Isle of Man, you would expect me to say nothing less.
Okay. Do you have salt on your chips? That's the important thing.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Do you have any suggestions to diminish female postmenopausal belly fat? I despair that I live a good lifestyle, but shifting it seems impossible, says S.
Yeah, no, so it is really difficult with that type of stuff. You're talking about sort of fat targeting or removal in specific areas, then actually that's probably going to fall into the line of less about dietary, more about getting advice from a personal trainer or somebody from a gym about how you would target it. Post-perimenopausal, people are we see quite a lot for our weight loss clinic. It tends to be more difficult to shift weight as you get on a little bit. So again, if specific area, specific toning, then I think less about losing of the weight, more about advice on how to change that.
My mum is immobile. She's 86 and is fairly large build. She spends most of the day sitting. Is there anything she could do to help her lose a bit of weight for her mobility? She goes to a class once a week and they do some exercises. She can get around a bit by use of a walker, says Sue.
Yeah, so I mean, again, all of these things are really important. I think that holistic approach to the lady's mum is really important. The exercise classes, getting great dietary advice, that type of stuff is really important. I think those are the best ways forward with it. We have seen people use weight loss medication even at that age, but you have to be really mindful. You don't want to, in that age, you don't want to lose as much body mass, because actually you need a little bit of padding because bones might be a little bit weaker and all that kind of stuff. It gets a little bit more specialised, but I think definitely in that situation, that holistic approach, which I think is important at all points in weight loss, is really important. But the exercise, the diet, and then any other advice depending on a medical condition, just seek out.
Are you still eating chocolate?
Less, actually. You know, somebody.
What was your favourite chocolate bar?
Do you know what? So I'm going to say Marathon because I refuse to say Snickers because I'm of that sort of age, Andy. But, you know, what's really fascinating about being on the weight loss jabs, somebody described it to me as the difference between can't and want. So when, you know, you're on a diet, you can't have things. When you tend to be on these type of jabs, what you do is you have a little bit and then you don't want any more. But the bit that was really powerful was the person said to me then, it's the first thing I don't feel like I'm punishing myself, which has got quite a big statement to it, actually.
What do your five children think of all this?
So my 21-year-old who's training to be a paramedic is now despairing. He's 6'3" and now can no longer nick my clothes, so he's a little bit disappointed. My five-year-old says, where's daddy going? And the guys in between, just as long as they can still get taken out for the food now and again, they don't mind too much.
Hello, Jill. Hi, Jill. You're live with Nick the Pharmacist.
The question is, does B3 help glaucoma?
Oh, that's a really specific question, Jill. So, I mean, you know, vitamins in general can help with sort of nervous system and that type of stuff. Glaucoma tends to be an increased pressure, obviously, within the eye. And most of the treatments tend to be within the both the inflow and outflow of fluid within the eye. What I'll do is if Andy takes some details from you, I'll do some research on that and get back to you directly on vitamin B3. But like I say, anything like that, advice from the optician is really important because that glaucoma is caused by that increased pressure within the eye, and you think the fluid within the eye is sort of constant, but it's not. It's flowing in and flowing out, and that's where lots of the medication works. So vitamin B in general is a good thing to have, but let's have a look at, I think B3 might be niacin. We'll have a look at that and take that offline, and I'll get back to you, Andy. Okay.
Jill, do you mind if Nick gives you a call and finds out more about that?
No, that's fine.
All right. Okay, we appreciate that. Thanks for calling us today. Nick the Pharmacist is on Man in Line today.
Looking for an exciting new experience on the Isle of Man? Then step into the brand new Soral Chocolate Making Workshop, where you become the chocolatier. Experience Soral's premium quality hands-on. Taste, design, melt and fill your own luxury chocolates. Then take them home the very same day. Perfect for friends, families, date nights or special occasions. But hurry, spaces are limited. So book now at soralchocolate.im. Soral Chocolate Workshop. Crafted with quality, made by you.
Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
Preferred Futures IOM is a local mental health charity dedicated to supporting well-being and recovery. Through compassion, understanding and practical support, we're helping people build resilience, hope and brighter futures across our community. To find out more and see if you can help, visit preferredfuturesiom.org. Preferred Futures. Seen, heard, supported. Hope for every future.
This advert is brought to you by Kell Properties.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
The exclusive Kärcher store is open with thousands of products, accessories and parts in stock. For Kärcher sales and service, Hersham Electrical, Shipyard Industrial Estate, Ramsey.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Imagine you have just stepped into a cool swimming pool. It's a glorious hot afternoon.
Brought to you by The Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
This place reminds you that life can be slower, and here, haste is not needed.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman, and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
And Nick the Pharmacist is here. There are community pharmacies all over the Isle of Man, of course in Ballasalla where Nick is, in Braddon, in Castletown, Douglas, Kirkmichael, Laxey, Oncombe, Peel, Port Erin, Port St Mary and Ramsey, and they have a thing called the Minor Ailment Scheme where you can actually go to the community pharmacist if you think you may be suffering from, well, anything really, from from impetigo, inflammatory skin disorders, UTIs, urinary tract infections, shingles, thrush, whether it's vaginal or oral, hay fever, coughs, gout, constipation, nappy rash, exercise-related injuries, and bacterial conjunctivitis. And crikey, Nick, you must see it all and you must hear it all.
Yeah, so we absolutely do. And I think what this shows is that, you know, the pharmacies are actually a great place for you to get that first point of care. And I know that that scheme's been running for some time and there's looking to expanding that and expanding it into other roles and other conditions. And actually, yeah, we do get to see it all. And actually, it's a real privilege sometimes to hear people's stories. And you never know where a conversation is going to go. You know, I remember vividly having somebody that came in to talk to me about her infected big toe. But actually, I realised within probably about 5 or 6 minutes, she was actually suffering from postnatal depression and couldn't get to access a general practitioner at the time she needed. To your point about then being able to, what did I do? Walked in at the pharmacy I was in at the time, co-located next to a general practitioner, walked her in, walked her through, sat her down. So, you know, we do see it all. And I love the fact that community pharmacists with other healthcare professionals are a really trusted source of advice. So, you know, and with most of the pharmacies as well, you know, there'll be a private area, a private room. You know, it's certainly changed since I qualified in 1998. The things that we're privileged to listen to people share is growing all the time.
When pharmacists get together on time off, what do they talk about? Is there a pharmacist association for the island?
There is a pharmacist association for the Isle of Man, and they're actually, you know, a really, really great group of guys. They've and girls. They've we now have our first female chair, which is great. And they do a good job of representing the island and actually then raising the profile of some of the other things that we can do. You know, we absolutely understand that, you know, the healthcare systems and healthcare budgets are pressured, but we do think that community pharmacy with all the access in all the places that you've seen, and one of the stats that I was really proud of a couple of years ago used to be 6 minutes from door to clinician. So from actually walking into a pharmacy, on average, some will be more, some will be less, to actually being sat with a clinician is somewhere between 6 and 7 minutes. And I think that access is something that we should absolutely be proud of in community pharmacy, and I think that's why people are looking at us to grow and do more things.
Do the pharmacists ever moan about lack of supply?
Yeah, so actually, do you know what? Medicines resilience is something that's really important and is becoming more of a problem. You know, again, some of the things the National Pharmacy Association were highlighting this week was shortness of some potentially epileptic medicines, medicines used in epileptic crisis, things like a medicine called midazolam. And, you know, we've mentioned this before, I've talked about this before, that, you know, we're in a global supply chain for medicines, and the UK in general pays less for its medicines than, I think we're 30th best payer in the world. And that's been great for the Department of Health, because community pharmacies have done a great job driving prices down. But now if medicines are short, if I can get £3 for selling it over here or 20p for selling it over here, where are you going to sell it? So some more thought needs to be given about medicines resilience. Really interestingly, sitting on the World Pharmacy Council, I saw something in Australia where they actually have a minimum price. So what they say is, we will buy this, you know, not ridiculous, you know, no medicine will cost less than £3. But for that, manufacturers have to guarantee supply. And that might be something really interesting to look at.
Okay. Did Nick experience... Oh, sorry, this is a personal question. Okay, did Nick experience knee pain with his heavier self, and did it improve when he lost weight?
Lots of different things I've realised. So, you know, I have lost more weight than an EasyJet suitcase allowance. And when you think about when you drag that up to the check-in and you go to lift that on the scales, if you're dragging that round with you all of the time, then that makes a difference. So less around knee pain, a little bit of potentially back pain. You know, one of the big things now is getting on the flight and not needing the extender for the seatbelt and pulling it tight, which I think is a real win. And having, as I've said, the number of children I have, actually being able to run round some of the, you know, soft play areas and being able to fit down the slides are the small wins every day, Andy.
Could Nick be a bit more specific about training pharmacists? What's a good university? What's a good course to go on?
Yeah, so there are lots of different courses of pharmacy in pharmacy across. And I would think where you want to go is go and and visit, go and see them, go and be part of them. I trained actually at the University of Bradford, and the reason I did that at the time, it was the only place that offered a split degree. So I did 6 months in community pharmacy, I did 6 months at St James's University Hospital in Leeds. That was quite novel at the time. Now lots of universities offer what we call joint placements. So when you qualify as a pharmacist, you have a pharmacy degree, and then you have to do a foundation course for a year before you can be let loose, for want of a better description. My brother went to Manchester. There's some great universities in London, but quite often, and for me, it's more about the feel of the university and the stuff with it. The other thing to say about pharmacy courses, wherever you go, they're regulated by our regulator. So the General Pharmaceutical Society, the General Pharmaceutical Council has to regulate a university course content. So wherever you go, it will have to be of a standard that's been approved.
Jean says, could you ask Nick, please, how long would he recommend staying on the weight loss jab? Is there a time limit?
I think it's really important, actually, because it's a really personal journey and depends where you're starting from and where you want to get to. So we tend to say to people that you're absolutely in control. This is up to you where you want to end up. Normal BMI is between 18.5 and 25. And when that BMI starts to go to the lower end, where we've had a couple of people, it's gone to that point where we've sort of had to intervene and go, now is the time for you to reduce. Other than that, very dependent on you. Who would have thought, Andy, if you know you're practicing medicine and you ask people how they feel, that would be the right answer, right? A revelation.
Fantastic. Okay. There are many more personal questions. People are saying, what happened to your old wardrobe?
My old wardrobe. So, on Balthane, we have quite a large warehouse behind, and somebody said we should set up a vintage so you could put clothes hangers on the way in and clothes hangers on the way out, which I thought was quite an interesting sideline, which, maybe we'll explore. But some to charity and some to my 6'3", 21-year-old.
In all seriousness, When will you know if it's working, or will you be watching your weight like a hawk?
So this is something that's really important, actually. I've been listening to and had some advice. There's a professor of genetics at Oxford Uni who described people and obesity and weight gain as having a genetic component to it. So, my parents were generation, you never left any food, always finished everything. And 80% of what we do can be probably taught, and you can train yourself to do something different. But I'm under no illusion that I have a genetic component to my weight gain, having battled with it. So
In the genes.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. So there was a professor of genetics, emeritus professor of genetics at Oxford Uni, and I hate the phrase, but he described it that everybody had an obesity thermometer. Now, I hate the phrase, but actually he described it as a tendency to gain weight. So whether that's your natural GLP-1 is low, your insulin is high, whatever it may be, but in the same way that some people's lungs are asthmatic, some people are tall, some people are short, that obesity is now being thought of as a chronic long-term condition. And because of that, I'm under no illusion that when I come off this medicine, at some point I will go back on this medicine. And that's really hard to get my head around. I'm going to try not to, but I also know what my own habits are like, being really open and transparent. So it's changed my life. I think it's put years on my life. But I don't know, even now, as a really experienced pharmacist in this field, what my ongoing relationship will be. And that's difficult.
And obesity is something, it's really, probably somebody mentioned this to me recently and just said it's when everybody stopped smoking that people suddenly started, so they swapped lung cancer and heart problems for obesity. And obviously obesity has life-changing implications.
Completely. And there may be something in that, Andy, right? That drive and that need for something which then suppressitates your appetite. For those of us with an addictive personality, for want of a better description, not smoking anymore, I reach for a chocky bar or something else that gives me pleasure. And actually, it's really interesting now, some of the studies coming through around this class of medicines are being used and trialled in things like, can it stop people smoking? Will it help with alcohol? Could it help with addiction and gambling? It's a fascinating class of medicine we're going to learn more and more about, I think.
Gordon said, Nick was talking about the fact that we're in the queue with the UK for pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
Why don't people bargain more then?
So it's really interesting. So I think bargaining more is something that's really important. So the medicines that we get reimbursed as community pharmacies in the NHS, irrelevant to which four nations in the Isle of Man you're in, are set on something called the drug tariff. So those prices are fixed and fixed by central government. And then individual community pharmacies try and get those medicines for a little bit cheaper. That's part of our contract. We're allowed to do that. What we've then bought them for is reviewed by the government, and and those prices are then tweaked and driven down. So I think as a country, the only way to sort of increase that buying power is if we get reimbursed more, so we can actually pay more on a global stage, which is unpalatable and difficult to hear when costs are always going up, but that's the reality.
Has any antibiotic or any medicine, any pharmaceutical actually come down in price?
Yeah, hugely. So, I mean, so really simple example, there was a medicine called Lipitor, which is the branded medicine off the top of my head, £30 for the cheapest strength when it was on patent. Atorvastatin now is probably costs less than a pound. So when things become off patent, they become what we call a generic. They're made to the same pharmaceutical standard, but because you're not paying for the research and development cost £250 million to bring a UK market, if you're not paying for that but you're paying for the tableting process, price drops really quickly.
What is there, and again asking for my husband, gout, how is it controlled, and is it inevitable? If you get gout once, will you get it again?
Yeah, so gout's really interesting. You can again have a predisposition to it, so it's when you get the formation of uric acid crystals within a joint, and then therefore you should kind of think about how you would limit the formation of uric acid crystals. So you tend to form uric acid crystals when you have a tyramine rich foods, and tyramine rich foods are things like, believe it or not, pickled herring, steak, red wine, cheeses, and if they crystallize out in the joints, then you get the gout. So the other thing you need to do is keep yourself really well hydrated. So the old-fashioned treatment for gout before medicines was drink as much water as you can, flush yourself out, and it's why gout used to be called a disease of the gentry, because those with nice high rich diets.
Okay, COPD, mm-hmm. Is this something that comes across your desk?
Yeah, so chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is something which is actually a mixture of lots of different diseases. So it's an overarching term that we use for things like emphysema, asthma, rebits, bronchitis. COPD is something that pharmacists do get involved with, probably not the diagnosis, but, helping people use inhalers properly, what does that look like? The management, as you said earlier, of somebody who was maybe getting recurrent infections. So pharmacists have a key role to play with it, probably managing it, but less on the diagnosis part.
Painful, isn't it? It
can be horrible. And one lady, when I went to a talk once, the most powerful thing I've heard with that was a lady with chronic COPD said to me, how is it? She said, imagine trying to walk up and down a flight of steps while breathing through a straw. And it's never left me. And if you think about how distressing that would be, anything we can do to help minimise that is really helpful.
Okay. In the years to come now, obviously, we're looking at whatever Manx Care is going to be doing for pharmacists. Stuff has happened, certainly, in the past few years. What would you like to see, or what would the association like to see pharmacists get from Manx Care?
So I think there's, if you look at some of the, in the Isle of Man, we could absolutely take best practice from lots of places as well as innovating ourselves. I'd love to see a rollout of the more conditions on the minor ailment scheme, as you described. I'd love to see prescribing being used in certain areas. I think we can play a much bigger role within vaccinations, and then really practically an emergency supply service, which has worked quite well. So somebody comes, they've forgotten their medicines, you can give them a small amount of supply. I think that would be something that would be really practical and beneficial and easy to implement.
Nick Kay is from Kingsley Mooty, and we've been talking to Nick today about just about everything, to be quite honest. Lots more questions I didn't get to.
No problem. I'll come back, Andy.
See you soon. All right, Nick. And please stop losing weight, Nick, whatever you do.
I'll do my best. Thanks, Andy.
Every time Nick stands at the side of me, I get even bigger. Right, thanks to Chris on the phone today, and thank you. And remember, Nick will be on with us again. If you want to pass any message on, by the way, you can email maninline@manxradio.com. And that's it. We're back with an open line, and on Monday, open line tomorrow, and on Monday, Claire Barber is on. Claire from DEFA, the Department of Food and Agriculture, will be on. In the meantime, enjoy your Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your day. WINT